You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Happy Friday to you here on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. We are coming to you here on KFH over the air, 97.5, 1240 AM. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with you on our video streams on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube X, and of course the Odyssey app where you can leave us voice messages. You can leave us video comments, all kinds of good stuff. Oklahoma City flexes. in the Western Conference Finals last night. The Royals get ready to continue the road trip down in Minnesota tonight. So those were a couple of big things. KU misses on a top prospect in the recruiting world, but lands a legend onto the coaching staff. We'll talk a little KU today. Helping us with the Royals will be Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, beat reporter for the Royals for the KC Star. It'll be a fun Friday. We're getting ready for the Memorial Day weekend. Going to be a little soggy, it looks like. Maybe a little chillier than you'd like, but as much as we need the rain, nobody's complaining. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like I've been waiting forever for this holiday weekend. I could use a couple days off. I don't know about you, but kind of burning the candle at both ends right now. So looking forward to kind of relaxing a little bit this weekend and recharging the batteries.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that for sure. Although, you know, weekends like this typically are busy work-wise because of, you know, the HTO stores. I don't know what the rain will do to that, but hopefully we'll see everybody out this weekend. At HTO, there's going to be a promotion, 2 gallons for $10. A nice little discount if you need some beverages for the holiday weekend. While we're talking about that, just real quick, we'll give away some HTO right now. Text the keyword TTEA to 20357, and you can win a free cup of HTO iced tea. Eastwich.com, Westwich.com, or in Derby. While you're in there, you can take advantage of the Memorial Day sale, 2 gallons for $10. Good luck, everybody. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. Tommy, we get back into it. Days off in baseball when you've got a team you're following closely are not my favorite thing in the world, which is what we had yesterday. A chance to digest some things, though. We're in the time of the year where you're really digging deep for content sometimes. And we did that. So I've got some interesting things for the Royals that I'll put on the table for us here. That I dug around and came up with yesterday. But the Jacques Vaughn news, you definitely want to talk about it. You grew up as a KU guy. He's, I'm sure, right in your wheelhouse, as are a lot of KU fans fired up about that. I don't know what it means for the team right now. I'm probably a little more concerned that they missed on Darian Williams, which we'll get into that piece of it in a little bit. But just like we can talk about the strategy of it in a later segment when we have more time. But how excited are KU? I get the sense that KU fans are pretty fired up about this.
Yeah, I think KU fans are extremely excited about this. I mean, you know, just from my perspective, Jacques Vaughn was one of my favorite players growing up. He was just so exciting to watch. And he was a key piece, a core piece of those really, really good Roy Williams teams back in the early 90s. And, you know, then he was one of the guys that was able to go and have a productive career in the NBA. And then I don't think anybody at the time when he was at KU looked at Jacques Vaughn and thought, yep, that's a future NBA head coach. And that's exactly what he's done. And he's had, you know, a lot of success at the NBA ranks. It is curious. It is interesting that he is joining the staff of the Jayhawks after a career as an NBA head coach. But I think
first time that's ever happened.
I think from a top level view, I think from 30,000 feet, you know, most fans of the Jayhawks are just excited about the fact that you've got a legend, an icon for the Jayhawks that will be now on the sidelines.
You know, it's interesting. I am curious about the same thing. I think that it could simply be a need for a reset, right? Like there's absolutely just like a, man, I love that place. This would be fun. Let's go do it. Or I think I would rather do this in college than the NBA. Why don't I go be an assistant at that place? And then we'll see if that can propel itself into a college career. Or, as you've brought up, maybe there's a sense of, let me go show that I can do this thing. And maybe I would become an option if and when Bill Self finally retires. I mean, I think all those things are possible. I think it's also possible that he just wants to go have fun and do it for a year. Like, and Kay, you'd probably be happy to have him in any of those scenarios.
It's interesting because, you know, Bill Self has been with the Jayhawks for 22 years, and he is, I believe, 63 years old. And there's really no clear succession plan for Bill Self once he steps away. And I think that most KU fans in that circle recognize that you're on kind of the tail end of the Bill Self tenure. It may go another 5 years. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to go past that. And it might be even sooner than that. And there's really no clear succession plan. And I'm not sure there really ever has been necessarily. And I know that Jayhawk fans like to think about keeping it in the family. It's not unlike North Carolina and what they've done with their head coaches over the years. But you look at former players and former people that are associated with the program and what they've done, and there aren't a ton of people that are like super exciting that you could look at. Like Jared Haas is out there. That's not an exciting option, you know, necessarily. Tad Boyle has connections to KU. That's not overly exciting. Mark Turgeon is retired. You know, that for a while, that may have been maybe the most likely, somebody like within the family of the Jayhawks. But even that, you know, isn't going to happen, you know, nowadays, because he's not that much younger than Bill Self is. So it makes me wonder, like, is this a long-term succession plan? And I've mentioned that before. Yeah. I don't know, and it very well may not be, but it does certainly raise that possibility.
At least it, yeah, look, it makes it a possibility. I cannot imagine it would be the plan. And, you know, keeping it in the family, like Bill Self's the perfect example of throw that right out the window. Like, you go get the best coach.
Well, he was
like,
in the family. Become, I mean, he had a connection to KU. He was an assistant coach for KU for a couple of years back in the 80s. So he had a loose connection, like with Larry Brown. He was with Larry Brown and John Calipari and, you know, all of that during the 80s when Larry Brown
but
was
does
there.
That, I mean, maybe that makes him a KU guy. I guess it doesn't for me. But, like, I think you always got to be careful with that. He was there for a season in his first year. Was he even a, yeah, he was an official assistant. It wasn't like a grad assistant, but for one, like, okay, like that's fine. Jacques Vaughn could be it. Like the problem is he's never coached in college. Like he has to get that. Just like, we just need to know what he can do. The thing is though, you don't become an NBA coach if you can't coach. So we know he can coach. Can he recruit? Can he do all of this other stuff? That's what, you know, that's what we'll find out. So Rick says he was an assistant. Rick, in 1985 he was an assistant at KU for one season before he went on to Oklahoma State. So I think it's just exciting. I don't really care, honestly. Like, I just think it's exciting to have him there and let all that other stuff, you know, happen as it happens. They had to replace an assistant coach. That's a pretty good get, right? Like, for a guy, You easily, and look, I think the implications of it could be bigger just simply because now you can say, hey guys, we got an NBA dude. You want to know what it takes to be in the NBA? Like, that should matter. I think it will matter as they go out. Now, if this is a 1 year thing, we'll never know how he was on the recruiting trail or everything. But if it's a 2 or 3 year proposition, then yeah, if his goal is to try to do that, then he's going to have a chance to prove it. That's what I think makes it a savvy decision for KU. We'll get more into this when we talk about missing on Darian Williams in a little bit. We'll come back. We'll get you ready for the Royals, a sort of a primer, a step back moment as they get ready to begin a series with Minnesota. So that will be coming here next. We'll have Jalen Thompson to dig in deeper a little later in the show. We'll talk about these NBA finals and all the other headlines as well. It's Sports Daily on a Friday.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. amazon.com/prime.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Nerds!
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to be here with you on this Friday. It is a Friday, which means Tommy gets to talk about his outfit.
I do, yeah. It's the Friday fit from our friends over at 3570 Golf Co. I'm wearing the Prairie hoodie today. Because, you know, it's slightly chilly, like there's a little bit of a crispness in the air this morning. So I had to break out the hoodie, and it's one of the softest hoodies I've ever worn, by the way. 3570 Golf Co., they are a locally owned golf apparel company, and all their designs, all their clothes, everything that they have really embodies this part of the country, the heartland, and all of that. So golf shirts, golf hoodies, golf hats, golf head covers. They've got a bunch of new things on their website. Check them out, 35x70golfco.com. By the way, if you go to the Wichita Open next month, and we'll be out there, 3570 Golf Co. will have a pop-up shop at the Wichita Open. So you can check out all of their great gear there at the Wichita Open. And it's a great partnership. And we love being a part of what 3570 Golf Co. is doing and growing in this part of the country. If you use the promo code Tommy, by the way, T-O-M-M-Y, on their website, 35x70golfco.com, you get 10% off your first order.
Yeah, I got to look at that. I got to get some stuff. Now, this brings up, and I tongue-in-cheek called it an outfit, because you talked about how big guy was one of your pet peeves yesterday. Outfit for men is a pet peeve of mine.
Why?
Well, listen, you can call it, what's the woke term for this? Toxic masculinity,
yes.
I think, is the woke term. I've got some of that. I'm going to tell you. Four older brothers, grew up in a family full of cowboys. I have some, and it's in there, and I don't apologize for it. I think it's okay. Men don't wear outfits. Okay. We wear stuff. We wear, you know, like
clothes.
You just
wear clothes.
Yeah. You just wear clothes.
Yeah. Look, like my everyday, I don't, like, if you were just going to ask me what my outfit was on a random Wednesday.
I'm not down with that.
But there is such a thing as a golf outfit. Like I lay out my golf outfits. I wear what I'm wearing for golf, and I'm okay with that.
Nope. Women call each other and talk about their outfit. Men don't do that. Sorry. It's like whatever. I'm behind the times. I'm whatever, you know, you can. Nope.
Hey, I may have a problem with big guy, but I'm secure enough in who I am to say that I have a golf outfit, and that's totally okay.
Nope, not me. Not me. And it's not even like I would. It's that I don't like it for anybody else. That has nothing to do with me. There's a great you like Jason Isbell, right? Do you ever listen to Jason Isbell?
Yeah.
He's great. He's got a song. It's a lyric in a song. And it's don't call what you're. It's like a dad talking to his son about like lessons in life and get. And it's the line. It's don't call what you're wearing an outfit. Like is the first part of that, and then it goes on and on, and it's really good. I've always like And even though he's very progressive, and probably it's like some dig at something, I'm like yes. Don't call what you're wearing an outfit, son.
So what
like,
you're
that's
saying?
Not what it is.
What you're saying is the next time that I see your son, I should be like, hey, I love your outfit.
You can, and you and my wife can talk about where you bought it and shopping and all these other things that. That my caveman brain will immediately go to. But as far as, you know, shirts and stuff, we love 3570 Golf Co. And I need to get some of their stuff. I need to check that out. All right. Promo code's Tommy if you want to get a discount with them. And I can't wait to talk to them out at the golf tournament, which is coming up soon. Tommy, let's talk Royals. Okay. So this is the time of year where we can dig into some things, but we not so much here, but we can here. We can always dig into things like outfit and big guy here. We have this form. We like that on TV. You're trying to like, you know, most of the year, everything is there. Like you cover the events of the day. You have days like yesterday where there wasn't. The Shockers lost in the conference tournament earlier. The Royals were off. Like there wasn't a lot of like headline type topical news. So it's like, okay, what do we want to dig into? For me, it was some of what we do here. And it's like, okay, let's look at the Royals here. We're 51 games in here, almost a third of the way through the season. Like, what can we pull away from this team? And of course, the offense has been the thing on everybody's mind. Well, you've got the great pitching and the really bad offense. And I think really bad offense is perfectly fair because it's one of the worst in baseball, only ahead of some of the worst teams in baseball. So we get into that, and we have touched on this. So I actually looked yesterday, like it, you know, how wildly inconsistent they've been. Every once in a while, they'll sort of explode in a big game, like they did in the finale against the Giants, and then it'll go right back to it, and there's no like runway for it. So here's what I found: 51 games, we're about a third of the way into the season. The league average offense right now, this is before games yesterday, scoring about 4.2 runs a game. That's league average. That's not a good offense. That's an average offense this year in Major League Baseball. I think the Royals are at like 3.4, maybe 3.5. They're almost a full run under that, just for that nugget. I think we kind of knew that, though, right? Like, we were aware of that. Here's what gets really interesting. So the league average offense is essentially 4 runs a game. In 51 games, the Royals have been league average offensively 18 times. So about 35% of the games they've played this year, they've been league average, right? Not good, not great. Just getting to the threshold of being a league average offense, they've only done that in 35% of their games this year. Then comes this consistency thing we've been talking about. Well, how many times have they done that 2 times in a row? Then, like, how many times have they been just league average for 2 games? 18 times, which is pretty wild, right? Less than a third of the times that they've taken the fifth. And then it's even worse when you go just to 3 games, 3 straight league average offensive games. They've done it once, and it was the Rockies series, which does that even really count with as bad as they are this year? So, you know, you can, no matter how you slice that, like, they just have had a really bad offensive season. They can't get anything to stick. They can't get anything to stretch out over a period of time. And that's, I think, where we look big picture. No, it's not panic time. Yes, their pitching is going to make a huge difference, and it's going to be one of the best staffs in the American League, and it's going to keep them competitive and all these things. But I'm not sure that they can overcome that inconsistency if something doesn't change. If we look at the entire season and you just look at their division in the American League, I don't think it's sustainable. Like, it has to be better. This offense is not going to get them where they need to be.
Yeah, as you're rattling off those stats, I mean, two things immediately come to mind. Number one is the fact that it's not all that surprising. I mean, I think generally speaking, we knew that it was not very good. Quantifying it in the way you did absolutely illuminates that. Number two is the fact that, you know, thank goodness for the pitching staff, thank goodness for the rotation, that they've been one of the best in Major League Baseball because they have a winning record despite all of those deficiencies. But it does bring up that question to your point. How sustainable is that? We know that both Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo are on the IL and, you know, we're less than a third of the way through the season. So the durability comes into play, and it's not a knock on the pitching staff at all. It's just people get injured, like things like that happen. And so it makes it that much harder to expect your rotation and your pitching staff to be able to come through and compensate for the lack of offense that we've seen from the Royals lineup throughout basically the entire season. I think the biggest thing that out of all of the numbers that you threw out there is that consistency. It's the fact that they've not been able in any stretch throughout the course of the season, except for a team that is the worst team in Major League Baseball history, have shown that they can consistently get offense and be productive in multiple games in a row. So yeah, like in the finale against the Giants the other day, it was great to see the bats come alive. It was great to see Salvi have a good game and all of that. Are we really expecting that in tonight's game against the Twins that they're going to follow it up? Probably not, because they haven't been able to do that all season long. So then it goes right back to the thought of, well, they really need a great outing from their pitchers. They really need to pitch well against the Twins offense, because I think that it's unlikely that they're able to produce at the same level that we saw on Wednesday, because they've rarely been able to do that this season.
Yeah, and it can change. I think saying that, I do think it will get better. I don't think it will be like this all year, but we're a third of the way through the season. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think there's enough internal improvement, and it's almost a guarantee at this point they add to the offense. And I would think, whether that's through Caglione getting called up or a trade, whatever it is. But right now, what they've done would make them, like, if they just replicate what they've done essentially over the course of the season, they would be an 89-win team. They'd be 89-73. It will be very interesting to see if an 89-win team is good enough this year. And that's probably not that far off of where we projected them to be. It would be like 15, 16 games over 500. I don't know if that's going to hold. I don't know if that's going to be good enough for a wild card spot this year. Right now in the American League, they would, if we were just like seeding teams, be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They'd be a 6 seed, so they'd be in. Basically, what you have is Seattle would be in, the Yankees would be in, and then all 4 teams in the AL Central would be the other 4 teams. So, I mean, maybe so. Maybe they can just ride it through and the AL Central stays like that and it's okay. I think so. It's not like the pace isn't troubling. The issue then for me is, does this style of play hold up against good teams? We know it holds up against bad teams. They beat the hell out of the bad teams that they've played this year. And then it's kind of, you know, 50-50 on the rest. That might be good enough. It all might be good enough, but I don't think it's good enough to win a World Series if they do get to the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Giants are a good team, and they took 2 of 3 from the Giants just recently. Right. I mean, it'll be really, really interesting to see how this huge series this weekend in Minnesota will play out for the Royals. But I do think that there's one thing that is really important to remember, and this is my opinion on this. I think the Royals offense, I think they are who they are at this point. And are they going to get better in the current configuration? Maybe. I mean, I think that you've got some guys that need to break out of their slumps and you know, Salvador Perez and, you know, I know Vinny's improved somewhat. Jonathan India needs to hit better. Like, there are guys that are not performing where we expected them to perform for sure. But I think by and large, the offense, they are who they are. And I think barring improvements, they might get slightly better, incrementally better, but it, you know, whether JJ Piccolo was going out and getting somebody on the open market, calling up Jack Caglione, I think the offense, they are who they are, but on top of that, I don't think this is ever going to be a team, at least this season. I don't care if they bring up Jack Caglione and go trade for another bat in the lineup. I don't think that this is ever going to be a team where the offense carries the team to success. No. It's going to be the pitching staff. The pitching staff will carry this team to the postseason or not. That's really where the pressure is. That's where the spotlight is. But I think it becomes, rather than, and I'm just pulling numbers out of thin air, rather than the pitching staff being 80% of the reason why this team is successful and 20% is the offense, let's balance that out a little bit more. It's never going to get to 50-50 or where the offense is more important than the pitching, but at least maybe like 70-30 or, you know, 65-35. Like, let's just get the offense a little bit more, some reinforcements in place so that the scales are balanced a little bit and it's not so aggressively important for the pitchers.
I agree with that. I think they just need to get to league average, honestly. Like, if the league average number is slightly over 4 runs a game, if they can get there, then I think with the pitching that they have, that probably would be enough. They're just so far away from that, especially like on a consistent basis. Here's what I will say, though. I do think internally you're going to see Bobby Witt Jr. hit for more power than he's hit. And I do think you'll see Salvador Perez certainly hit for more power than he's hit. I think if he plays and is fully healthy, he's going to hit more than 12 home runs this year. So, you know, I think both of those things will help. I don't know that Vinny Pasquantino is going to hit for any more power than he's hit for, but I do think he'll be a more productive player if he's a part of the team or whatever, however it shakes out with Cags, if and when he ultimately. But I do think there's some internal power improvement. But it's you know, are they going to go from, you know, just a little over 3? Can they just get it to 4 runs a game? 4 runs a game with this pitching staff is going to be good enough to win a whole bunch of games. They're just not there yet. They're not there. They're below that by quite a margin. So we'll see. Now's the chance for that consistency. They just broke that threshold in the last game against the Giants. Now they go to Minnesota. They'll face starting pitching that's not as good as what they just faced in San Francisco, I don't think. So can you now stretch that into a week or two of baseball where you're just sort of feeling it? Remember when we started this season, I thought that it would be like last year. I thought there was a good chance it would be like last year, and this would be a very streaky team offensively. It has not been streaky thus far. It has not hit that hot streak yet. If that's true, and they are what they were last year with largely the same players, there will be a hot streak at some point. Is it long enough? Is it enough times? Does it time out right? That was what we dealt with last year. We just haven't even seen the hot streak this year. Like, it hasn't been there 51 games into the season. And I thought, and maybe we're just wrong about that, or I'm just wrong about that, that maybe they're just not a streaky team at all, and maybe they're just a bad offense, which is what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the benefits of the timing of this series against the Twins is that, you know, the Royals, Guardians, and Twins are all right about the same in the division as far as their standings are concerned. The Guardians have been slumping lately, and so while they, you know, have a better winning percentage slightly than the Royals do, they're 4-6 in their last 10 games. So the Guardians are not playing at the same level that we saw a few weeks ago, which is a benefit. So if the Guardians can continue to slump and the Royals are able to get the Twins this week and even 2 of 3 games, then they've solidified themselves back in second place in the division. Like, this is a pretty crucial series on the road for the Royals. And, you know, the Twins are one of the hottest teams in Major League Baseball right now. Is it likely that the Royals can go in and take all 3 games? Probably not. But if you can win the series, if you can try to get 2 of 3 on the road against Minnesota, at that point, you have gotten yourself right back into where really you're chasing Detroit at that point for the AL Central lead. And so and the other 2 teams are behind you. So you're banking on the Guardians not playing well and continuing not to play well and then taking 2 of 3 from the Twins. So there's a real opportunity here this weekend for the Royals, you know, to be able to get right back into things.
And I think that they will. I think they haven't even looked at the, because we're not there yet, but let's just look at the starting pitching matchups real quick on this series. I know they'll miss Joe Ryan, who's been, you know, the kind of the ringleader there. Yeah, Pablo Lopez, who's been good.
They're throwing Noah Cameron tonight, so it'll be another Noah Cameron experience, who's been really good in his first two starts in the bigs. But Pablo Lopez is one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball.
He's been good. Zebby Matthews, who Surge fans will remember in the second game, and then Bailey Ober, who's been good this year too. But it's not like what they faced, I don't think, in San Francisco. So, and you like the, these are the three you kind of like right now for the Royals to take the mound. So it's big series. Minnesota got one from, or sorry, Cleveland got one from Detroit yesterday, which means all three teams chasing Detroit are all three, five games back. Just so what a wild ride this division's going to be this year. Minnesota, obviously one of the hotter teams in baseball. They've won eight of their last 10, and the Royals will try and, you know, do something about that. That game will be tonight. You'll hear it. It's a 7 o'clock pregame coverage. I believe it's a 7:10 first pitch there in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. And here we go. Buckle up. These divisional games are going to feel heavy. Like, they're going to feel big. Tommy, KU, we talked about Jacques Vaughn. Exciting. People are excited. Definitely get that sense for longtime KU fans of, you know, the generation that we belong to age-wise. So they miss on Darian Williams, though. And I think that, you know, has an immediate bigger impact. At least we think it does, or I do. To next year, Williams, who we kind of been waiting on for a long time, the Will Wade effect, goes to NC State instead of KU. That's a tough one to swallow. That is, because I think KU, I don't know if NC State, you know, who knows if they were able to like come up with more money on this or something, but I was surprised to see them not land him when they so clearly wanted him specifically. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two things. And you said Will Wade, number one, that's absolutely the first thing. Players love Will Wade. He is a player's coach. He always has been. And so I think that that's a major, major factor of it. But I think number two, we don't know this for sure, but my thought would be NIL. It'd be the amount of money that NC State was able to throw at him. I can't imagine that, you know, when you combine those things together, that you've got the appeal of playing for a coach like Will Wade, who is kind of brash and in your face and like a player advocate and all these different things, and the amount of money that NC State was able to throw at him. Those two things combined, that probably pushed it over the edge for him. That would be my guess.
I think NC State's a cool program, and I'm glad they're in the mix for that kind of player. Like, I like that part of it too. But and look, there may be other players that KU can quickly pivot to, but Darian Williams checked a lot of boxes for them and what we think they're going to need next year. That's why it surprises me, because he seemed to be such a perfect fit. Knows the conference. Obviously, that coaching staff knows him well because they've seen him play so often, and they didn't get him. So I think it, like, to the immediate story is KU didn't get a guy that they really wanted to go get. And historically in the portal, I don't remember, and we don't know this stuff very well, but they've pretty much been able to go get who they want in the portal over the last few years. And what, you go back to Remy Martin, you go back to Hunter Dickinson, they, you know, last year to Rylan Griffin and some of these guys, like pretty much the guys that seemed to be a fit that were at the top of these classes that KU was in on, they get these guys. They didn't with this one.
Heck, they were able to go and get Kevin McCullough from Texas Tech a couple of years ago.
Yeah, in an even more like direct comparison. So I don't know what the pivot is now. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that NC State put a better package together when KU really wanted and needed this player. That's what stands out to me about this. I think maybe they were able to just dump all their eggs into that basket. I haven't looked at their total class.
That was probably part of it. But I mean, I think that even if Kansas offered more money, and Kansas has deeper pockets than almost any other program in the country, I would imagine. But even if Kansas did offer more money than NC State did, I would imagine that the combination of the amount of money that NC State offered plus the allure of playing for a coach like Will Wade, those two things combined may have pushed it over the top for NC State.
Maybe so. And again, if it's the allure of that coach or whatever, that means Bill Self, who's always been the allure of guy. I don't want to overreact to one player, which is probably the way this sounds.
I think it's okay to be a little concerned. I wanted Darian Williams badly also. I mean, I thought that he was a perfect fit for the Jayhawks, and I really felt like the stars were aligning to have him be that kind of final key piece of the roster for Bill Self next season. So now they've got to pivot, and now they've got to try to figure out either, you know, what does the roster look like without him? Can we fill that hole without going and getting somebody else? Or who is left out there? And I know that there are a couple of other guys they've had their eyes on, but even the guy from Arkansas, Boogie Fland, the Jayhawks were in on him too, and he chose Florida. He went to go play for the defending national champions. So, you know, I don't know who else is out there. I would imagine it's a lot of players that are going down to the wire to make that decision about whether or not to stay in the NBA draft or not.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. Jeff Goodman points out that they also lost Dame Sarr to NC State. So maybe NC State got a couple of guys that KU was in on. Maybe so. And again, that's the Will Wade effect. We knew he would be impactful there. It was a really smart hire by them. Maybe this international business is something KU can get into. That's where K-State's kind of at right now, looking around.
Rick, by the way, Dame Sarr actually committed to Duke, not to NC State.
Okay, so Goodman's point, must have been a typo. His point was that KU lost on two guys that they wanted, and they're still looking. Rick says that if KU has all that money, but they laid off 10% of the athletic department, those two things don't match. I don't think those have anything to do with each other.
Yeah, I'm not.
The NIL funds and the athletic department funds are very different things. Laying off administrators that make $100,000 a year to save KU, wherever that reporting was, with a K, like it's $3 million over 3 years or something like that. That's not the same thing. That KU's not taking NIL money and paying paying administrative staff. That's not how that works. So I don't think those things have anything to do with each other.
Yeah, a couple of the names that are still available that, you know, I think the Jayhawks are waiting to see whether or not they stay in the NBA draft or not. RJ Lewis, the St. John's transfer, is currently in the draft, and he could be somebody to look at. I mean, they need a starting forward. That's really the area, yeah. I think, they need some depth in the front court for sure. And I think
he's a guard. Let me double check this.
Yeah, he's a guard. He's a guard.
At 24/7 lists him as a small forward, 6'7". Okay. So he's complete forward. He's forward. So yes, I think immediately he becomes. Let's see if they have anybody on him on their No, they don't have any crystal ball on him.
Jameer Watkins is available. He's a Florida State guy that uh-huh. is listed as a forward. That he's in the NBA draft right now. You know, wonder if, you know, he would, you know, leave the draft and look at maybe going somewhere else. And then another name is the guy from North Carolina, Vin Allen Lubin. He's 6'8". He could be paired up with Florey Badunga and be, you know, a front court type guy too. So those are some names, according to Sports Illustrated, that the Jayhawks could potentially look at, depending on whether or not those guys stay in the draft process or not.
I've got one for you. This will be a good one. You might like this. How about Ty and Grant Foster?
He doesn't have
a home yet.
Yeah, that would be interesting if he ended up back
Kansas. After the two names you mentioned, Luis and the Florida State dude, he is 24/7's next highest ranked forward in the portal at 112. So you're going from Darian Williams down the list a ways. Ty and Grant Foster, age 25. He was good though last year. He was really good. He had, you know, scored 15 points a game. He scored 20 points a game 2 years ago. So maybe worth a shot, right? Like, why not? Who cares?
I mean,
I don't know what the terms were that they ended on, but you know, it's a name.
According to On3, Grant Foster is number 10 of their best available transfers, and that was as of yesterday. But it doesn't look like Grant Foster is considering coming back to Kansas. The teams on his list are Gonzaga and Washington are the two top, and Arizona State.
Stay out.
Apparently, those are the top three teams that he is considering.
So, just in a total ranking, Darian Williams was the sixth ranked prospect. Jameer Watkins, who you mentioned, RJ Lewis is the fourth ranked. I think he's probably going pro. Jameer Watkins is the seventh ranked prospect. So not a lot of drop off. Again, this is all a fit type thing, but at least as far as like rankings and things, that's where those guys are. We'll see. I don't know if KU has been in on them. We don't know that stuff as much. We knew they were in on Darian Williams, and we'll have Shreyas Lada. Shreyas is on vacation, but we'll get the latest. They may have somebody signed by them. They may make a quick enough pivot, but boy, I would have lost money that Darian Williams was coming to KU.
Me too.
I thought it was going to
happen.
Me too.
I thought it was a lock. And honestly, I know that there was a ton of fire around Dame Saar committing to Kansas, and that was like a big deal for the last probably week or so. I don't know. I feel like as soon as like Duke really began to pursue him pretty heavily, it became at least apparent to me that Saar wasn't going to be a guy to join the Jayhawks. So I'm less surprised, honestly, about that move as I am about Darian Williams not going to Kansas. I really thought that he would stay in the Big 12 and go with Bill Self and the Hawks. So now they've got to pivot. I mean, they've got three open scholarships left. And you look at their roster on paper. I think they could, if they didn't make any major consequential move for the rest of this offseason, you could take the guys that you currently have and field a team with them. But I'm not sure that it's an ideal situation. I think they need to go and try to at least find somebody who's remaining out there. And maybe it's one of these guys who is considering whether or not they want to stay in the draft process.
Yeah, look, they can field a team, but is it good enough to win the Big 12? I mean, that's all.
I think it depends on how good Peterson is.
When you get down to it, you're kind of banking everything on Darren Peterson at that point.
You are.
Which worked for Duke, right? So it can be done. I don't think it's going to be as highly regarded, and you've talked about it a lot of times, highly regarded as he is, to think he's and hope and expect him to come in and do what Cooper Flagg did for Duke is not a healthy place to start, in my opinion. Like, I don't know that that's so. Yeah, I do think they need somebody else. It's certainly going to be him and Flory Badunga that you kind of begin with. And then, you know, like as Shreyas has pointed out, Jamari McDowell and Marco Jackson, those are top tier prospects that, you know, are probably.
And apparently, I read this article the other day that apparently, before Marco Jackson went down with his injury, he was slotted to be a starter on the, like he was going to start on the team last year before he missed the entire season.
When we get to actual games and get the recruiting part done, they'll be the two most interesting players, I think, on that roster. We'll come back another hour of Sports Daily. Jalen Thompson joins us in the next hour. Stick around.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is another hour of Sports Daily here on this Friday. Glad to be with you here today. We'll have Jalen Thompson coming up a little later in the hour. Tommy, NBA playoffs continue last night. Oklahoma City continues to kind of show that they're the top dog here. That was a pretty, you know, wire-to-wire convincing win over Minnesota. They, again, are you know, showing how good defensively they are as much as anything else, which is, I think, for a lot of NBA fans, probably pretty refreshing to see a defensive-minded team doing it. SGA, the MVP, gets to the line a bunch. That's what he does.
Man, how good is he, by the way? How good is he?
He's so good.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad he got it. I'm glad he got the MVP so that we can all understand what he is and what he's doing. In Oklahoma City, always not the, you know, the headline or the spotlight. The NBA doesn't have its clear-cut star right now. Maybe that's Anthony Edwards playing in this series. Not so far. Maybe it's Victor Wembanyama when the time comes. Not so far. Right now, and I don't think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is ever going to take the mantle from LeBron James, which is what the NBA has been waiting for a long time. But he's the MVP, and he's on the best team in basketball. And so I'm glad we were able to acknowledge that in the awards. I'm glad he got it so that we can kind of all – because he's been doing this now for 2-3 years. But, man, he's killer right now. He's killer.
And man, you know, a lot of people criticize him for the amount of fouls that he draws and the fact that a lot of his offense is from the line. I mean, I've seen people say, well, yeah, his production is based on him getting to the line. And I'm like, I think that's a ridiculous argument. Like, you're playing physical, and he plays physical on both sides of the court for sure. He's a great defender, you know, and then he's able to get to the line, and you've got to adjust. If you're a defense, you've got to know that he is going to try to draw contact and get to the foul line. And he's really, really good at that. And at least so far in this series, the T-Wolves have not had an answer to stop him from getting to the line.
I don't know that they're going to have an answer either. I don't mind that at all. Allen Iverson's one of my favorite players ever, and that was his game, right? You just go in. Fred VanVleet was so good at that. If Fred VanVleet would have got the calls in college that were actual fouls, like if he would have got any calls at all, he'd have scored 25 points a game. That dude never, and he was so good at it. I have no problem with it. It's a part of the, you know, it's a part of the game. He doesn't take, it's pretty rare in today's NBA. You score 38 points without, you know, hitting a bunch of threes, but he was good. Anthony Edwards was good in the game, just not good enough collectively as a team. And Oklahoma City does what they're supposed to do at home. Now, can they get one in Minnesota here and put this series away, or will Minnesota climb back into it? That'll be the question, but get, you know, Oklahoma City Thunder fans, get ready. Like, there's nothing that tells you this ain't going to be a good run here. Now, will it be a dynasty or I don't know. I mean, there's so much parity in today's NBA. It's really hard to predict that stuff.
Well, you haven't had a repeat champion in the NBA in what, like 15 years or whatever it's been. Yeah. It's been a long time.
It feels like the Golden State dynasty just happened, right? Like, it feels like that was just yesterday.
It was like 10 years ago, right?
It
like
was
10,
at least,
12.
And I'm just about to look at the list of NBA champions here to verify the actual last time we had it. So the Golden State dynasty, they won two in a row. They won two in a row in 27 and 18. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's been 6 years since anybody's won two in a row, and they won 3 out of 4, 15, 17, 18. So maybe a little closer than we thought. But it's been a minute.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the 2016 year was the LeBron Cavs year,
and
I believe.
The year, yes, that's correct. So in the middle of four, you had LeBron get it done that year. That was the year they played each other in the finals.
Yeah,
every
that's
year.
Right.
Right. So that's what made to me. And honestly, I think this has for me, like when I really sort of was just like, all right, that's enough for me every year. It wasn't just that it felt like it was Warriors Cavs.
It was Warriors Cavs every single year.
Why would I even care about anything here when it is this? And so that's behind us now, and we haven't had anything even close to that. And Golden State got another one since then, to their credit, but we haven't had anything close to that since. Not even no repeat champions have we had. So it was, so after that year, and then the next year to sort of put a dagger in that dynasty is when Golden State had the injuries and Fred VanVleet and the Raptors were able to get it done in that series. So you had Lakers, Heat, Bucks, Suns, Warriors, Celtics, Nuggets, Heat, and then Celtics, Mavericks last year. So not only are we not seeing repeat champions, we're not seeing repeat teams to the finals. And I think,
and we won't this year either.
What's that?
We won't this year either. I mean, we've got four teams
this year
haven't been there.
And so the question then becomes, and Oklahoma City hasn't even won a championship. They still have a lot of work to do, but if things continue for them, could they be the next one? I don't know. I would say no. I would say no, but I think they'll be in the mix all the time. But I would say the chances of them coming out and rattling off a bunch of straight championships or whatever, that to me, that seems unlikely at this point.
I would say the chances of them doing it are higher than almost any other team that we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years.
See, I would have thought the Nuggets would have been higher.
And the reason I say that is because they've fundamentally built the team differently than any of these other teams that have been flashes in the pan that have come in, they've won a championship, and then they're not back. They've built it on a foundation of youth, on defense, on all of these different things, where it's more about the foundational team chemistry and the young stars and all of that, as opposed to going and buying the top talent on the open market or trading for them or whatever it is and bringing them into the city for a couple of years. I mean, like, that was what Kevin Durant did for so many years after he left Oklahoma City, was just going to the highest bidder, going and joining a team that already had superstars on it. That's not what the Thunder have done. That's not how they've built their team. And so I do think that it's a different strategy. And so the chances of them being that team to do that and to win multiple championships, I think the chances of that are actually greater than these other teams that we've seen win titles.
So you had, since the Golden State dynasty was sort of dead, nobody thought the Raptors were going to be a dynasty. Nobody thought that Lakers team in 2020 was going to be a dynasty, too old at that point. And here they are 5 years later. The Bucks, I thought, would have had a chance for sure with Giannis, right? Golden State, then the next year, that was a one-off. We didn't think so. I would have said the Nuggets, and I do think would have had a chance just because Jokic at that point was doing the things that he was doing. The Celtics people, and who knows, the Celtics could have started one had Jason Tatum not get hurt. The problem for them is Tatum's going to now probably be out next year too. So that will probably end those chances. Are the Thunder in a better position than the Nuggets were, or they're deeper? Yeah, they're deeper. They are. So maybe. I'll give it a solid maybe. The problem for them is these other teams still exist, right? And will have a chance to. And I think that, you know, the separation between them and their peers is not like what it was with Golden State. It, for sure not. Like, not even close. Golden State was so much better than the teams around them. When you look back to, like, the Lakers dynasty, they were so much better than the teams around them, the Bulls, like these other. I don't know that I'm ready to put Oklahoma City there yet, but I do think they're pretty clearly the favorite this year, and they are playing really well, really well right now. And they've got Minnesota down 0-2. You've got Knicks Pacers tonight. The Knicks are favored in that game. We'll see if they can bounce back from their historic collapse. And they don't skip a day. So the Thunder T-Wolves game 3 in Minnesota will be Saturday. So no days skipped. Thank you, NBA. That drives me crazy when they do that. And we'll see if the Thunder can, you know, can put it away, basically, and get this thing done. Who you taking, Knicks Pacers tonight?
I'm going to take the Pacers. I think that with the momentum that they had in the overtime win and everything, I think that they'll get another win here. And I know that, you know, the Knicks, their backs are up against a wall a little bit here, being down 1-0 in that collapse in game number one. I just think the Pacers have too much momentum, and I think they'll get game two.
Boy, it feels a lot like that Knicks-Celtics series when we were saying the same thing. Like, yeah, the Celtics really let that one go, and they'll bounce back, and then the Knicks would find a way to... I'll take the Knicks. I'll take the Knicks here.
And by the way, for the record, going back quickly to the Oklahoma City-Minnesota series, as much as I like the Thunder, and I think the Thunder will be the NBA champions, I mean, I'm going to pick the Timberwolves in game three. I mean, they have to have it. It's back at home in Minnesota. And I think that at least this first game, they'll get the win, and Anthony Edwards will have a good game, and it'll be 2-1. I think the Thunder will get game four, but I do think here in this next game, when the series goes back to Minnesota, that Minnesota will at least get game three.
I agree with you. I agree with that. I'll take the Knicks tonight, though. I'm not going to take a -6. I'm not, like, betting it. I'm not advocating for that, but I think they'll win the game tonight. All right, coming up later in this hour, Jalen Thompson, our Royals insider, beat reporter for the KC Star, will join the program. He'll stop by. College football playoffs have new seeding rules. My question on this is pretty basic. Do we care? Like, is this that impactful? Is it as impactful as, you know, it's being made out to be? We'll talk about it next when we return. It is going to go straight seeding next year. And then I think the more, you know, headline-y part of it that's not getting talked about, there's going to be expansion after that. We're all talking about the seeds, but in that buried is that there's going to be expansion. So we'll talk about that when we return. Don't go away. More Sports Daily coming your way.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long!
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here live with you. Glad to be here with you. Let's talk about this college football stuff, Tommy. So the headline is that they're getting rid of the conference champion auto buy portion of the postseason and going to a straight seeding model next year. I got to be honest with you. I do not care about that. I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't think getting a buy in this situation for as long as they have to take between games is a massive inherent advantage, because you're going to play a team in that second round that has at least had some time to shake the rust off and you haven't. I really think that's a big deal. And so I don't really care. Like, I'm sure there will be hand wringing from Big 12 people that are like, oh, now the SEC is just going to get all the, I don't care. I really don't, because I don't think it's that much of an advantage. Now, getting it at home, I mean, I don't, it's, to me, it's just not that big a needle mover how they seed this thing out. I don't. It just doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there, you can look at a couple of different teams on either side of the spectrum from the CFP a year ago. First off, Penn State, for example, had one of the easiest draws, if not the easiest draw, going into the bracket. I mean, they did not win the Big Ten championship. They lost to Oregon in the Big Ten championship. They played SMU and Boise State in their path to the CFP. That was probably the easiest draw with all the teams in the CFP. On the flip side, the team that they lost to in the Big Ten championship in Oregon, they got a bye. Oregon got a bye in the first round, but then they had to go and play Ohio State. And of course, Ohio State won the national championship. So I think having a straight seeding model in that way is probably better. It's probably more equitable as opposed to the top winner, like the winners of the championships in the conference are getting the premier seeding, because that doesn't always mean that it's going to be the best draw. I'd rather have straight seeding. I think it's better for all the teams in general.
I agree. Look, and the other part is, and this to me is the bigger headline, 12 teams is done after next year. And it's either going to go, by all reports, either going to go from 4 to 14 or 16. At this point, for me, I think 14 is a waste of time. Just go to 16. And we haven't had much time to digest it, but like, we need to be done with the bye. Like, if we're really going to wait 3 or 4 weeks between the end of the season and this thing, which is so stupid, we should not do that. But if that's going to continue, we don't need to have a bye. Like, just go to 16 teams, 1 versus 16. We can all and make them home games for the better seed in the first round, or maybe if it's even the first two rounds, whatever it needs to be, and we can all move on with our lives. That's what's going to need to happen. Now, if they decide we're going to start this thing 1 week after the seed, like when the conference championship weekend is done, the playoffs will start the next week, then I would say, okay, maybe 14 makes more sense and you can do some buys. Because at that point, I don't think, but if we're going to wait this amount of, you can't wait 3 weeks and then start with buys. Like, we can't do that anymore. It is not good for the team getting the buy. And of course you want the buy, but I don't think it's like, I think at that point you're hurting yourself. So if you're going to wait, just go to 16 and don't do a buy. If you're not going to wait though, I could be more on board with 14 and taking the bye week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that from a competitive standpoint, if you're just straight seeding the teams, whether we're talking about 12, 14, or 16, I think straight seeding is probably the best way to do it. But at the same time, I also understand the underlying current in all of this, and that this is an SEC and Big Ten power play. There's no doubt about it. Like, they're running the show, and we've always known that they have been. They've been advocating for this seeding model for a long time, and they've been advocating for a larger field for a long time because they feel like more of their teams are going to be able to get in. And so while having the top four conference teams automatically getting byes and being the top four seeds in the CFP, while that benefits the Big 12, it benefits the ACC, it benefits, you know, the conferences that are not the SEC and the Big 10, I can also recognize that that's probably not the best way to do it moving forward, even though I don't like the SEC and the Big 10 and the kind of power that they hold in college football. I can recognize it's probably the right move, but I also can recognize that this is them throwing their weight around to get this college football playoff exactly the way that they want it.
I don't like them particularly. I
mean, both things can be true, right? Like, it can be the best thing for the CFP, but also it can be frustrating that it's these guys throwing their weight around.
If we are being honest with ourselves, and we try to be that here, and we looked back historically, let's call it just the last 10 years of college football, how often do those two leagues have the best teams? Because I would say it's almost always.
Yeah.
Almost always, right? Yeah. Especially now with Texas and Oklahoma gone out of the, you know, Florida State's had a couple in the mix. Clemson has had some certainly in the mix. But for the most part, it's Ohio State and Michigan, and it's the SEC. right? Like, that's it. And now the Big Ten likes to pretend like, oh, we're the Big Ten and we got, no, you have two good teams, yeah. right? Like, you've got two really great teams.
Before they joined the Big Ten, it was, you know, like, Oregon had a right, stretch right. And Washington had a stretch and all of that. And now they're both in the Big Ten.
Right. So, and we should put Oregon in there too. So I'll call it three. Now the Big Ten can say, like, we've got three elite premier, like Penn State's cute, like whatever. That's no different to me than the Big 12 representative or anything else. You've got those three teams, those Notre three
Dame,
programs.
Notre Dame's been in the mix recently, you know, like that's,
they're not in anything.
Right, they're not in right? anything.
They're not in anything. So, That's like, if we're being honest, yeah, the power lies in those two leagues because they've had the best teams, and that's okay. Like, that's never bothered.
You get flashes in the pan with like TCU making a national championship game, things like that.
So I've said this 8 billion times, as long as the other conferences have representation, I don't care that it's weighted heavily toward the Big Ten and the SEC, because I think the reality is, and I know they haven't played each other, and I have a problem with that. And all, but if we're they send the most players to the NFL, like whatever way you want to look at it, they've had the best teams, and that's fine. You just like for me, you just have to have your conference champions in, as you can. And this is a little bit hyperbolic, but as long as you have an ACC, a Big 12. And the best of the rest in, as long as those three are in, I don't care if the rest of the 11 are all Big Ten and SEC teams. I don't.
The only thing,
I just want to make sure that those three are always in it.
Yeah, the only format that I would have been interested to at least look at and consider that still could benefit the other conferences, at least on the front end, is maybe there could have been a way to put a bracket together where the conference champions still got some kind of benefit, you know, whether that's a bye or whatever, but then there's reseeding that happens after like a first round or second round or whatever. So you still get the conference champions that get a benefit on the front end because they are the conference champion, even if it's not SEC and Big Ten. And then after the first round games or maybe the second round games or whatever that looks like, you reseed it based on just, you know, top to bottom strength. And I know different note, the NFL considered doing that this year at the owners' meetings. The Lions wanted to do that. They put a proposal together to reseed the playoffs after the first round of the playoffs and go top to bottom after the first round was done. Now, obviously, that didn't pass, and I think actually the Lions, they rescinded that proposal. But that's something the NFL has even looked at. Like, you could have done something like that, too, in the CFP to still find a benefit for the conferences that are not the SEC and the Big Ten, but are still in the Power Four or Five or whatever you want to call it, and then reseeded after that based on overall strength.
That would be
fine.
You could have done
something like that, and then you could have accomplished both things.
I wouldn't have a problem with that. I think sometimes we overthink this, right? We have our conference champions in, which means that the issue that we have faced forever before last year in college football was that when you're watching your team, you can't guarantee that if they have the best season of any of their peers, that they're going to be represented in the postseason. That's stupid. Like, it's dumb. It makes no sense. It never has. It's silly that we've done this forever, whether it was two teams, four teams, whatever. You had way too many teams not represented with the opportunity to get into the postseason. It doesn't make sense. We fixed that. Because conference champions get in. So for me, it is that simple. If they want to reseed it, however they seed it, if those three teams are automatically the bottom three, I don't care. As long as they have a chance at the end to go get on the field and prove it. That genuinely, I mean that. Like, I don't care. Now, am I going to have fun with the rest of us in each individual year saying, oh, man, that second or third best Big 12 team is better than the fifth best SEC team? I'll take. Of course I am. Like, that's the fun part of the conversation. But the reality is, as long as it's there, we're all winning, because now your college football regular season means more. It means something. It means that what you're watching matters, because your team, if they're able to make it through the grind of their regular season, is going to have a chance to go win a championship. That's why every other league that we watch does that, right? If you were the best team of your peers in the regular season, you will have a chance to be in the postseason. We have that now. So I'm good. I don't care if they go to 14. I don't care if they go to 16. I just want the gap. Like, now my top priority is eliminating that gap between games. I think we're doing ourselves a disservice with that gap.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments, by the way, and really specifically, like the Big 12, for example. Like, well, it devalues the Big 12 championship game because they're, you know, you're playing for a bye.
Yep,
you're playing for an automatic bye. But here's the thing. Just go back to the most recent Big 12 championship game that we had with Arizona State and Iowa State. Yeah, they were playing for a bye, but they were also playing to get in. Like, it wasn't
either one of these teams
were automatically going to get a bid. They were not going to get an at-large bid. Both of those teams, if memory serves, like, they were both in the teens as far as their rankings. Like, they were right on the precipice. Mm-hmm. Either one of those teams, like, the loser didn't get in to the CFP, right? And so until we get to a situation where, like, the Big 12, for example, has, I don't know, two teams in the top seven or eight in the rankings playing in their conference championship, where it really doesn't matter. The game doesn't matter ultimately, because
the loser would be knocked out, where both teams,
I mean, could very well get an at-large bid. Like, they don't need to win their Big 12 championship game. Then that's a valid argument. But right now, that's not a valid argument for the Big 12.
No, and it's going to happen. Look, there's going to be a time where you have, let's say we go to 16 and you have a two-loss team that is inside the top 16 before the conference championship game playing a three-loss team that's outside the top 16. The three-loss team will beat the two-loss team. The two-loss team will get knocked out of the postseason and should have never had to play that game. That's going to happen. Like, it'll happen for sure. And that's, I mean, I don't know.
What if you have a Big 12 team, by the way, that is, I don't know, a top five team going into their conference championship game, and they're like, you know, look, we're going to get an at-large bid regardless, and it doesn't really benefit us because we don't get a bye either way. Like,
right.
We're not doing that.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's rest our starters in the Big 12 championship game.
Doesn't matter. Conference championship game is the big conversation to have now. I think you could have almost like conference tournaments could be beneficial, because the other problem I think you might run into with the at-large situation is you can't play, like, you aren't giving your at-larges enough of a chance to get in either with big wins late. And so, like, the Big Ten, for example, last year, you had a situation with Indiana. They didn't ever play anybody. They never beat anybody. And so we have to my thought is you'd be better served not just a championship game, but leave yourself enough time in the schedule to ensure that your top teams, especially as the leagues grow and get bigger and you don't play everybody, to have like a four-team tournament at the end of the year. I said that last year. I think that would help us sort of weed out the pretenders. And I also think it would provide an opportunity for a team that might be really good to collect a couple of big wins to boost them through where they might not have the chance. So play one fewer regular season game, essentially, and then you take like a conference semifinal in a championship. You take those top four teams and put them in their own little conference tournament, essentially. I think that would also help us get to the best teams at the end of the year.
I get your thinking on that, but I go back to what you just said a few minutes ago. I think sometimes we overthink things, and that does make things a little bit more complicated, right? You're basically doing a conference tournament, and then you're doing a national tournament. And I know in basketball that happens all the time, right? That happens every single year. College football is a little bit different, and as far as the grind and all of that. I mean, and I'm not opposed to taking away a regular season game to do something like this.
Just lose the bye game.
I just think that the logistics of all of it, it's going to take a lot, I think, to pull something like that off.
We're in the weeds on that. You just, like, you could lose a bye game, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to try very hard to not get too caught up in those small things when we are ultimately getting the thing that we've been begging for forever, which is representation in the postseason for a championship. The Big 12 has never been guaranteed that before. They are right now. So that's a win. that protects the future of college football, in my opinion. It keeps it a national sport, right? And not just a regional collection of Big Ten, SEC. I know people have said, well, they can just break off. That would be detrimental. We do not love college football for the same reasons we love the NFL. We will not all of a sudden all become interested if the Big 12's not represented when Alabama and Tennessee play. Like, okay, cool. Those are two good teams. Like, we're not setting our watches to it as much as they'd like to think people do. They don't. And don't try to go down that road, college football. You won't like where it takes you. Let there be representation no matter what you do, and the sport will flourish. And I think that they are. And I think those types of rumors have subsided greatly. And I think we're on the right path here. 14, 16, however they seed it, I don't really care anymore, because conference champions get in. And so do the Cinderellas. Like, you're guaranteeing a Cinderella a chance to get in. That's also good for the sport. Like, we need to see these teams, that Cincinnati's, Boise State's, these teams of the past, UCF had some, like, give them a shot in there. Who cares if they get blown out? I don't care. The SEC, like, these teams get blown out in the college football playoffs all the time. The margins of victory in college are just bigger than they are in the NFL.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that, again, going back to the original point of what passed, is that having a straight seeding model, you're still getting the same number of teams in. You're still getting the same teams in, by and large. You're just not getting a benefit for being a conference champion. And I get the fact that, you know, conference champions are absolutely important. But, I mean, we would be kidding ourselves if we thought that Boise State is at the same level as Georgia, right? Like, they they both may be conference champions.
Make them
play each other, for sure.
But let's be real about it.
They're both in the tournament, but I think we're kidding ourselves if they're both at the same level, you know, as far as the stature of their conferences.
And that's okay. We got to all be okay with that. Like, we just do. It's reality. Still trying to connect with Jalen Thompson. We'll see if we can make that connection today. Tommy, the Royals get ready tonight for some games with the Twins here in a series that could have major implications down the road. You got to take it all, you know, as it comes to you. But the reality is, in this division, it sure appears like these divisional games will be highly impactful. Some years that's been because you were trying to beat up on the AL Central, right? But those days are behind us now, and this has become one of the better divisions in baseball. And so it's as much as you want to win them against, but you can't afford to lose them either. Like, that, we don't know which of the teams. It may be all the teams, maybe all four teams. If the playoffs started today, you'd have four AL Central teams in. But it's the problem with it is everybody's good, right? So you play these games and you just don't. I mean, you'll get some against the White Sox, but everybody else is good and maybe really good. And Minnesota is, of those teams, the hottest at the moment. Of course, Detroit's the best team in baseball right now, but Minnesota's won 8 of 10. And so here you go if you're the Royals. Never been a better time to wake up the bats a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I was having a conversation with our buddy Matt Hamilton, who's the general manager of the Wichita Wind Surge, and of course, they're a Twins affiliate. We were talking about the Twins, and we were talking about the hot streak that they've been on lately, and one of the things that I mentioned was that it certainly seemed like this hot streak and the fact that the Twins have been able to turn things around probably saved Rocco Baldelli's job, the manager of the Twins. I mean, like, they were, I think, expected to be a contender, and they got off to a very disappointing start in their season. And Baldelli has been there for a while and, you know, has had success, but not probably at the level that, you know, most people expected. And I think they expected the Twins to be pretty good this year. And the fact that they have turned their season around, they've gotten hot, they've won 8 of 10. They had won 13 games in a row at one point. Like, they had really gotten, you know, hot for a while. Probably saved his job a little bit. So the Royals now go to Minnesota, taking on one of the hotter teams in Major League Baseball.
You know, it's interesting if you look at the division right now and you try to, because, you know, we're expecting all four to be good. So, and maybe I'm the only one who does this. I look at it and I'm like, okay, all four of these teams are, in my opinion, they're all for real. They're all going to be good. who is going to be the team that elevates and like gets better, does whatever. I think as we look at it, Detroit's probably pretty set to stand pat. I don't know. I mean, maybe they go out of bullpen arm. I don't know the up and downs of their roster as well, but they got a bunch of young players. I'll bet you Detroit's not. And there you have historically, they've shown they can be a big spending team. So I don't think it would be that. I think they're probably, though, you're the best team in baseball. You got a young team, you know, and maybe they just kind of ride it through. That's just a gut feel. They could go at, who knows? Cleveland never really does anything at the deadline. So I don't think it'd be them. I think the two teams that are most likely to, on paper, improve at the deadline would be Minnesota and Kansas City. I think Minnesota is at a place for them where I don't know if desperation is the right term for them, but I think they'd probably be more ready to push it in. And we've talked about the Royals since the offseason that it feels like with all the other things they've got going on as an organization, this like now is the time for them. Like it's as obvious a time to sort of push it in as you could ever get. Because they don't have a great farm system. They're not trading Jack Caglione. It's just not that great. So you're not like clinging to any of that. You have enough young pitchers, I think, either here or coming that you feel okay about the future. But I do think the clock is ticking a little bit on Lugo, on Waka, maybe even on Lorenzen. If you like, there is a little bit of a ticking clock on some of this where they probably need some urgency to go try to do it this year, I think. So as you look at it, I do think these are the two teams that will probably make moves from outside of the organization to get better at the deadline. I do think that about the Twins too.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how when you're looking at what that looks like for the Royals, what are you willing to give up if you want to try to go outside of internal candidates to improve the team like Jack Caglione? And, you know, I know that there are others in the farm system too. What are you willing to give up, you know, to go and try to win immediately? And where do you prioritize that compared to the future? And I don't disagree with you. I mean, Seth Lugo is, what, 34 years old? Lorenzen is in his early 30s. Waka is in his early 30s. You know, Reagan's isn't a spring chicken either. I mean, he's younger a little bit, but, you know, it's not like he's in his early to mid-20s, right? So, like, you've got a rotation that is primed to win now. But the good thing is that you've also got pitchers that still probably have, you know, a long career ahead of them. And Noah Cameron, I know it's a small sample size. They clearly like him a lot, and he has shown at least through the first couple of games that he can get it done. They like him. Chris Bubich has been the best pitcher in that rotation this year. And I know he's been with the organization for a long time. He's still pretty young. You know, he's probably got a long time left. And then you've got guys like Alec Marsh, who could be a decent rotational piece. I don't think he's ever going to be an ace, but he could be a decent rotational piece. Kyle Wright, I know they still feel like he can come back from injury and be the guy that won 22 games in Atlanta in, when was that, 2019 or 2020, whenever that was. They like him a lot, too. And then you've got Daniel Lynch and others that are still there that are growing and young. And so they've got pieces that can back up some of their aging rotational pieces. I just wonder how aggressive do you want to be in giving up some of the guys, some of your prospects to win right now?
Very aggressive, in my opinion. You're not going to trade Cags. That's not going to happen. I think you've got three catchers right now inside the Royals' top 10 prospects. You can trade two of them. For all I care, like just pick one and keep them. Yeah, trade the others. I would have thought Noah Cameron would be a piece, but if he comes through and has a couple more good starts, honestly, it doesn't make a lot of sense to trade him because he could help you down the road with what you just talked about. So then, like, does Alec Marsh? I think Alec Marsh would be very tradable for me, but he's hurt. You're not trading Cags. My guess is they would value Blake Mitchell the highest, but so might another team. So you're not trading Cags. You're not trading one of the catchers. You're probably not trading Noah Cameron, and everybody else is available. How much value is in there? I don't know, but I don't think they're going to be in the market to need to trade those caliber of players to bring a player in anyway. because they're not going to go take on a $60 million a year salary or just something ridiculous like that. They're not in a position to do that. They're not in a position to go trade for an impending free agent, at least not trade a top prospect for one. I think they'd be willing to do it for a lesser deal, maybe like a low level prospect. Sure. But I don't think they need that stuff, right? Like when they're going to be aggressive at the deadline, it'll be aggressive to make small moves, in my opinion. I don't know what large move they would even want to make at this point. I mean, you going to go trade for an all-star caliber outfielder? The reality is, I mean, outfield, like we worried about the outfield. They've had a productive outfield now with MJ Melendez sent down. Like their outfield's been pretty productive. It's not driving in runs, but that's where you look elsewhere in the lineup. So,
well, and if you want to look at outfielders, I mean, I know for a long time, not just with the Royals, but a lot of teams, they've been linked to Luis Robert and will the White Sox move him and all of that. He's having a terrible year. Like he's got
a big contract.
He makes
too.
A lot of money and he's having a terrible year. He's batting under 200. I think if the Royals, and I'm not suggesting that they're going to do this, but if they felt like we need to make a big splash and we need to do it now and we need a bat and we need an outfielder, the one name that continues to come to mind is Cedric Mullins from the Orioles.
Colton Cowser, like one of
their outfielders. But I mean, I really think Mullins would be like that guy. I mean, that's a bigger name for sure than Cowser is. Yeah. But one of those guys in the Orioles outfield, if they felt like they needed to make a big splash and name recognition and somebody that's performing and productive at the plate and can play the outfield, I'm not sure that they're going to have the appetite to go and make that big of a splash right now. But if they do, those would be guys that I would look at.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's going to be at, you know, it'll be at the expense of somebody. Mullins has been around for a while. He's 30 years old. He is having a fine year, right? He's doing a good job right now. So,
and I don't, and by I'd the way, by good. The way, I don't think it's
not a great job.
I don't necessarily, I like right. Colton Cowser a lot. I don't think that Cowser is going to get moved because he's controllable and because the Orioles can continue to build around guys like him and Rutschman and Holiday and, you know, Gunnar Henderson. I don't think that, you know, Cowser is going to be somebody that the Orioles, they're going to want to move. I think a guy like Mullins, who is 30, that's more expensive, is probably going to be a more likely candidate.
He's a rental, though, that we do have to remember. We need to remember.
But if the priority is to win right now, then that would be, I think, something that the Royals might want to look at.
But what are you willing to trade? So for a rental and a guy who's 30 and a guy who's been okay this year, he's had better year, but we know what he can do. I mean, why go trade Alec Marsh for Cedric Mullins, right? Like I think I would be fine with that risk. Alec Marsh and a lower level prospect for him. Like, but Marsh is hurt. So that I'm not trading Noah Cameron for him at this point. So that, you know, they'll have to work through that. And then the other thing you have to evaluate is it a clear upgrade for him over Michael Massey, I guess would be because Massey would probably be the odd man out of the rotation if they go to trade for an outfielder and then India plays second base every day. So, you know, okay. Like maybe, yeah, I'd probably be willing to take that swing.
I mean, hey, look, I think that if you've got a guy like Michael Massey who can be a depth piece, you know, can come in and give you, you know, starts and be kind of versatile and can pinch hit and, you know, do these different things. Or he's part of the trade, but I think if you maintain that depth, I mean, that's not a bad thing. I don't think he would love that, I'm sure. But, you know, I think that if you're playing a guy like Michael Massey as a platoon depth piece type guy, I think that's a benefit.
All right, let's look at Mullins here real quick. We've got a few minutes. Mullins right now this year is a .236 hitter. He's getting on base. But he's hit 10 home runs.
Yeah, so his OPS is over 800, I think, or right around 800.
He's going to give you the power you need. And he's done this, and I just look at this year because I know last year was a little bit down for him. The 3 years prior to last year, though, he was very good. He's a power hitter, basically. And he can steal bases, too, so he fits. So right now, you're J.J. Piccolo. You pick up the phone and you say, I'll give you Michael Massey and Alec Marsh for Cedric Mullins. You like that deal?
I do. Yeah, I do. If they're going to make that trade, I do. I mean, you know, the thing about Alec Marsh though is that he's injured, and so the Orioles would want to take a look at
You're probably not trading Cameron right now.
No, I mean, I think that the Orioles would probably say, We'll pass on that just because Alec Marsh is injured.
So here's what gets really interesting on Cameron, who starts tonight. What do the Royals really think of him? That's what I want to know. Like, obviously, his performance in his first two starts has been spectacular. How do they scout him, and how do they evaluate, and what do they believe in? Because if they believe that this is not normal, right, and he's not going to be quite this, that adds to strike while the iron's hot with him as far as a trade goes, right, too. Because if, you know, you have to trust your own evaluations.
But you can never have enough young, controllable pitching.
Right, Brady Singer, I know, but they've been willing to do it, right? They've been willing to be aggressive that way. I don't know what they think, but they'll tell you that they love him, and I would too. I mean, why not? He's been spectacular. All right, that'll get us ready for the weekend here on Sports Daily. We've got Royals baseball all 3 days this weekend. We will be off on Memorial Day, so we will talk to you again on Tuesday. I hope everybody gets a little rain. I hope everybody avoids the severe weather. And I hope we all remember the reason for this holiday, this weekend, Tommy, and enjoy the start of summer and get some family time in. It'll be a nice weekend for everybody.
Yeah, it'll be good to rest and recharge and get back to it on Tuesday, hopefully with some good Royals news to talk about.
You know, the series against the Twins. Well, there will be a lot to dig into, and we'll do it on Tuesday. For Max, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. We'll see you then.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out.
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.